Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. If you hadn't noticed, I got a little extra pep in my step today based on our podcast guest, who I'll give you a little bit of his biography right now. He hails from Laval, Quebec. He played 4 years at the University of Vermont, where, Jeff, he had 265 points in his college career, almost 2 points a game. After his college career, he signed with Calgary, and it actually wasn't until his fourth year professionally that he became a regular in the NHL with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But since then, he has scored over 1,000 points. He's won an Olympic gold medal. He's won an Art Ross, a Hart Trophy, a Lady Bing, a Ted Lindsay, and he has now just been inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame. One of my favorite players of all time. I don't know why, but he's a great interview. It was awesome having Martin St. Louis on the podcast here today. But before we do get over to Marty, let's bring on the talent of the podcast, Jeff Lavecchio. Jeff, what's going on today, man?
Not much, Toski. Had an unbelievable day. Great to be back in the gym on a Monday with the boys after the weekend you and I had. And couldn't be more excited having a hockey genius such as Marty St. Louis on the podcast. So it was a pretty good day.
It was awesome talking hockey with him, for sure. Like, it was, yeah. especially towards the last half of the episode when we really started getting to the nitty gritty and talking some puck. Like, it was really cool to hear his point of view, and I certainly learned a ton from listening to him talk. So you know, I went into this, you know, he's my hero, you know, he's my idol. I wore number 26 in college. I wore number 26 in pro. You know, when we were growing up, there weren't very many guys of our size. He's probably got a couple inches on me, but that made it to the NHL, and he did it with heart. He did it with passion. He did it with determination, and so cool for me to be able to talk some hockey with him, because it was really, really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, he definitely has a couple inches on you in all the right areas. In his thighs, I'm talking about his thighs are massive. His thighs are massive. And of course, I had to ask him about those bad Larrys on the podcast, because I wanted to know about those things. None of the boys would have been happy with me if I didn't ask him how he got those bad mamma jammas. So he was a great sport. And yeah, at the end of the podcast, like, he really started opening up and talking about some things that I think a lot of people are going to get some good knowledge out of.
Yeah, it was unreal. I mean, it was a bunch of guys that are passionate about the game talking hockey. And, yeah, I mean, you can clearly see that when he played. You know, he wore his heart on his sleeve. He was an emotional player. He was such a joy to watch for me. And again, he was the guy I was in the basement emulating all the time. And to be able to interview him on our podcast today, it was really, really cool. I was trying really hard at the beginning. It's funny. So I'll just say it right now. I totally choked in the first question. I was like so excited to talk to him. And I was like, you grew up in Quebec. How was that?
How was that?
I don't even remember what I said, but I just remember we're talking on Skype, and I just remember looking at you and giving you a look like, did I just say that? Yeah. Like, what an idiot. But he was great.
It's like in Harry Potter when he's trying to say Diagon Alley and he goes, diagonally. Muncie and I always laugh about that. It was really funny watching your face. It was cool to watch, man. I mean, you don't get to most people don't get to have a conversation with their heroes. So that was really cool to watch you be able to talk to him.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it was a really enlightening conversation. Really cool to hear about his journey from where he got to. Again, a lot of times on this podcast, when we do talk to guys that have gone on to play pro hockey, play in the NHL, we've had quite a few of them on here now. It's amazing to talk to them about how it was hard. You know, it wasn't a straight path. It was ups and downs and everything all along the way. And to hear kind of his story and to him talk about his story specifically, how, you know, it was tough for him being a smaller guy in that era to make it. And it wasn't until, like I said, his fourth year pro that he really became a regular in the NHL, and he signed in Tampa Bay. And then once he got that opportunity and a little bit of belief from the coaching staff that he played for, I mean, obviously, NHL Hall of Famer now.
Is that Is that good when you're a Hall of Famer in the NHL? I don't know. Yeah,
not bad.
I guess that's right. Did I break it? Yeah, I guess that's pretty good. Yeah, man. I mean, a lot of the info that he was dishing out was really cool, and talking about, you know, not just playing fast and running into crap or whatever he said. It was pretty funny. But like thinking the game and like think fast, don't always have to skate fast. You know, it was,
don't rush, it was think fast, don't rush. Right.
I think that was the same.
Think fast, but don't rush.
And then I was totally getting flashes of like him, like when he was talking about the way that he would think on the ice and how to, you know, play deceptively with his speed so that he could get space. It totally just brought me back to like us playing together in the tournaments that we got to play in, and even us skating in the charity game the other day, and you doing that exact same thing, like sprinting at a D-man, pulling up, backing up, and then throwing some sick sauce. I was like, yeah, I totally see how you emulated him when you played. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, he was my hero, man. It was so cool watching him play in my formative years in high school and college and stuff. And, you know, not many guys of that size made it. And, I would probably say that I got as far as I did in my career, you know, partly because of his inspiration. So, thank you to Marty for coming on the podcast. Thank you to Roger Grillo for helping set that up as well. So appreciate that.
Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, we should talk about the weekend though, man. It was an unbelievable weekend in Chicago, with the first ever Hockey Think Tank Hockey Development Conference, followed by our Chicago Hockey Charity Classic, charity game benefiting Special Olympics Chicago. So I think let's start with the conference first, man. I mean, I had a blast. I learned a ton. What was your kind of takeaways from it?
Yeah, man, I learned a lot, and I loved the booklet that you had set up and had out for everybody, and it was very professional, and it was, you know, was able to have something to bring home. Everybody had something to take home with them, like something tangible, something physical. That was a great idea by you, and I loved all the presenters, everything they said. It was like, wow, like, oh, I didn't think of that. Or like, yes, like I kind of think the same way. And it was cool how it was interactive. It wasn't just people talking at you. It was, you know, if you had something to say, you could, hey, raise your hand, say something, let's talk about it. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point of the conference, was to make sure that it was interactive and you're able to. And that was one of the cooler things, too, I thought that we did, was the breakout sessions where you got to sit in little small groups and talk to all the speakers that were there. And they all stayed around for it, too. I mean, Connor Carrick and Ryan Hartman are NHL players. Derek Lalonde, assistant coach with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I made sure that those guys were in my group, so I was able to listen to them talk. But it was cool. I mean, so for the listeners, what we did, we had our speakers, we had some panels and stuff, and then we also broke into small groups and we split it into three different areas. We had a systems and concepts group, we had a skill development group, and then we had an off-ice group. And it was really cool. Paul Goodman was great too, the head strength and conditioning coach for the Chicago Blackhawks. He didn't just talk, he had us all doing these exercises and stuff. I think there were a few people that were actually a little bit sore the next day. But as another strength coach, how did you feel like he was, and did you take something out of it? I saw on Instagram you were actually doing some of the stuff that he taught us over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, something that he literally taught all of us. I had my pros doing this morning. I found a way to work it into their training session today, and I love it. I really like his philosophies, and my own personal philosophies really. You know, it's not 100%. No two strength coaches are going to be the same, but like a lot of what I've been doing and thinking is what he does. Like, so it's really cool for me and kind of validation for me that a guy who's won 3 Stanley Cups, he's training them the way that, for the most part, the way that I've been training my guys. So for me, it was cool to hear that from somebody who I look up to. Super nice guy, super intelligent guy. And all the things he said, I think a lot of people, it opened a lot of those older coaches' eyes to what you can do with no equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because every team doesn't have a strength coach. Every team doesn't have a gym, especially amateur teams, which is most of the coaches. So like, and that's okay. You don't need that. There's so many little things and big things you can do to get better with literally only your body or bands or, you know, like, some, you know, partners. So it was really cool. And then on top of that, like, you know, very cool, Ryan Hartman and Connor Carrick to come and you know, I feel like I'm always pumping the guy's tires, but I really like that Connor Carrick kid, man. He is a good
stud.
Dude, he is a good person. He's a good role model. Any of our listeners, listen to the podcast we did with Connor Carrick a few weeks ago. Follow the guy on Instagram. Have your kids following on Instagram. He's somebody that people should look up to.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And he actually
positive role model.
Yeah, and follow him. Yeah, his Instagram is unbelievable. He's such an inspiration. And he actually just did another podcast with Craig Custance from The Athletic, one of the top NHL writers in the game. And Craig actually gave us a shout out our podcast, because that's kind of where he. I had done some work for Craig in The Athletic last year, and he's an unbelievable guy, unbelievable writer. So thanks to him for the shout out on his podcast that I'm sure has a few listeners. Actually, I know he's got a ton of listeners, with that. So,
hey, and he came on our podcast early on. So for any of the new listeners, go back in the archives. One of our earliest podcasts was with one of the best NHL writers in the game today, Craig Custance. And he gave us so much good information. Like, we asked him some pretty cool questions that, you know, I don't think a lot of people get to ask that high level of an NHL journalist. So I thought that was a really cool podcast. Check it out if you guys haven't heard it.
Yeah, yeah, unreal. And then just the whole rest of the day. I mean, it's just a validation, too, of how many good people there are in hockey. You know, Derek Lalonde, assistant coach from Tampa Bay, like literally he saw on social media that we were doing this, and I had known him from, you know, just the hockey world before. And he reached out and he was like, "Hey, I'm actually in Chicago that day. you mind if I come?" And I was like, yeah, sure."
So no way.
Yeah. Newsy's awesome. One of the best. And to hear him talk about how he coaches, his topic was how, you know, coaching the best players in the world. And so he talked about some of the things that they do with Victor Hedman and Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos, and showed a bunch of great video clips and some of the things that they do with them. So that was really, really cool. I thought Ryan Hardy was awesome with his presentation.
Ryan Hardy, what a guy.
You have a man crush on him. I know you do. But
you know what? I like genuine people, man. He's a genuine person. He says what he feels. I really like Mr. Hardy. But don't get a fat head, Ryan. Episode 18, he kept saying all weekend, hey, hey, I'm on it. Listen to Hockey Think Tank episode 18. He's a good dude.
Yeah, but even Spudsy Josh Pauls, you know, the captain of the USA Sled Olympic team, he was amazing. Our agent panel, we had three NHL agents that came on. Brian Kane and Anders Sorensen, who are two of the leaders in the skill development world, talking about the present and the future of skill development. So, I mean, just an amazing day. Really was. The feedback that we got from everybody that was there was really positive. And just can't be more proud of the work that everybody did there. So thank you to everybody that got involved. Thank you to Power Player and Gel Sticks for sponsoring the event. That was awesome from them. And we did videotape it, so I got a lot of questions from people on social media and by email if it was going to be available. So I have no idea how we're going to get it out to the world yet, but we did have it videotaped. So at some point in the future, we will get that out there because it was really cool.
Yeah, totally agree, man. You killed it. It's really cool. And for all the listeners, Toph, like, I am on this podcast with Topher. I don't set anything up. It's literally, I mean, I set up podcasts, but Toph does all of that stuff. It is not me. So when you're like, oh, thank you, don't thank me. Thank Topher. Topher did the charity game. Topher did the Hockey Think Tank conference. It's not me. It's Toph. He's a genius. He's the man.
No, luckily, I
know him, and he invites me to these things, and you know, I have some fun. But very cool stuff, Toph. You killed it. I know you're gonna be weird, so don't even make a comment. But back to Marty St. Louis.
Well, actually, hold on. One more thing before we do go over to Marty. I just want to mention the charity game that we did over the weekend, too, because there were a lot of people that stepped up for that. You know, Brian Kane got a lot of the players. Kevin Magnuson, who's an NHL agent, he spearheads a lot of it, too. He is a part of Special Olympics Chicago. He used to be the president. Now he's on the board. A lot of great players. So one of the players we need to talk about is Kendall Coyne, Schofield. She is nasty.
She's sick, dude.
So good. She had four goals in the game, And she was she was unreal. And Alyssa too. Alyssa Gilardi, who's a hockey think tanker, like she was nasty too. And just watching them play, I was like, I mean, it was pretty cool. But you know, having them out there, Dale Talon, unbelievable guy, came out to be a guest coach. Ryan Hartman played in it again. JT Comfort, unreal at hockey too. Holy crap! And he just signed a ticket. What was it, like 3.5 a year for the next 3 or 4 years in Colorado. So you could tell in those games how good they are. But yeah, it went off. Like the charity game was so much fun. Got to play on a line with you and my father. So that was pretty special. And just all around raised a lot of money and raised a lot of awareness for a great cause in Special Olympics Chicago. So thank you to everybody that came. Thank you to everybody that donated and sponsored. And the one thing that I did want to mention too that I think was the best part of the entire day was Kendall Coyne at our reception beforehand. She actually presented an autographed jersey to a young girl that was there. And did a whole big thing where we kind of brought her up there, and the smile on that girl's face after Kendall gave her the jersey is honestly a moment that I don't think I'll ever forget in my entire life, because it was like literally pure elation and pure joy. And it just goes to show you the fact that how much of an influence, you know, we can have, especially people like Kendall and JT and all those, you know, heavy hitter type people that came. Just what an unbelievable influence. And Patrick Kane's been like that when he's played in our charity games. Unfortunately, couldn't come this year, but they just light up the room and light up all the people around. And that little girl's face, I will never forget it till the day that I die.
Yeah, that was really cool seeing that. Like, no doubt. I mean, it's kind of like you and Marty St. Louis. That's what you looked like when he answered the phone. So I saw stars in your eyes. Hey, we got to thank the boys at Centennial for having that after party, because, you know, I'm not a big alcohol guy. I don't like the taste of alcohol. Like, don't like the taste of beer. Whatever they had there, I actually really liked the taste of it. The food was money and just super nice humans. So if you're in downtown Chicago, check out Centennial.
Yeah, that was cool too. And so we had a little bit of a, I don't even call it an after party, but a little social gathering after our conference on Saturday, where a bunch of the speakers and the participants came to. So we had quite a few people there, and just over a couple beers, got to shoot the breeze and talk some more hockey in a little bit more of a relaxed setting. And I know for me, like, I've legitimately on the road recruiting, you know, after long tournaments and stuff, just sitting around having some wings and shooting the breeze with some college and pro scouts. And I learned a ton from hockey that way. And I got a lot out of that too. I think a lot of the participants did in Centennial. They were awesome for sure. So good call on that shout out as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it must have been really windy since you're shooting all those breezes down.
I'm saying that a lot, right? Sorry. Well, you know, usually you say shoot this something else, but we say shoot the breeze on this podcast. Yeah. But no, hey, I think we've talked enough. I think we should get over to Marty, because this was such an awesome conversation. Thank you again to him for coming on and sharing his wisdom and knowledge and journey. And so without further ado, let's head it on over to Martin St. Louis. We are so excited to have on this episode of the Hockey Think Tank podcast, Martin St. Louis, one of my favorite players of all time and one of the top players of our era growing up. So, Marty, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking some time out of your drive home from your summer vacation up in Quebec. And speaking of Quebec, that's where you grew up. And just wanted to ask you, kind of starting off, it's what we do with a lot of our guests, how you fell in love with the game up there. So if you could, just tell us how you fell in love with it.
Well, I just think growing in Montreal, like, you know, being a Habs fan, my dad just, you know, watching the Canadians every Saturday night, and all the outdoor rinks, everybody skates up there, like everybody plays hockey. I mean, if you don't play hockey, you're probably, you know, either very sick or, you know, you're not around a rink, I guess. Not sick in a way that I'm just seeing, like, unfortunately sick.
Yeah.
That just everybody plays. you know, and they might all have another sport, but when I grew up, everybody played. They might not play organized, but everybody played hockey. So for me, I just did what all the other kids in the neighborhood did, and played a lot in the outdoor rinks and played organized. So it was easy for me because I was around it all the time. So it was easy to fall in love with something that you were exposed to so much at a young age. And obviously, you know, having the Canadians, you know, in the backyard and the success they've had, and obviously all the cups they've won, and being able to see that. They won in 86. I was 11. They won some in the 70s. I was born in 75, but I was too young. But I saw the 86 and 93 cup, which was pretty cool.
So growing up at that age, because you're 10 years older than Topher and I, was hockey a year-round thing back then, or were you taking summers off to play other sports? How did that work when you were coming up?
No, it was you played other sport. I played soccer. Some kids played baseball. You know, hockey kind of went from, you know, late August to, you know, April maybe, you know, and maybe even a little earlier than that. Then we jumped into what was next, you know, for me was soccer. I think my era, we started a little, I feel like we started the summer hockey. Not till I was a peewee, I played in a couple summer tournaments, but it was literally like just show up and go play kind of thing. But it was, you know, it was only the best of the best got to play. You know, it wasn't everybody playing. So it was really, it was actually fun to really, I'd go to Toronto or Ottawa, and actually we did a trip to Vancouver. It wasn't like till I was about 12 that we started doing that. We only did it for a couple of years because after that,
that's
done. But like second year Pee Wee, first year Bantam kind of thing, and it was fun to go measure yourself against, I guess, the best. But now everybody plays year round, so the AAA is not really AAA. Everybody's AAA.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and I wanted to ask you, Marty, because got to talk to, you know, a few of the guys that coached you growing up, and, you know, some of your former teammates before this, and one of the things that was pretty constant was how close you are with your family, you know, your mom and your dad, and you obviously have three kids that play right now. You know, growing up, how much of a positive influence were your parents on you? You know, not even in terms of like your hockey playing and growing in that career, but just, you know, making sure you were a good person and, you know, instilling the values that allowed you to be an unbelievable hockey player, which you are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I grew up in a very, you know, loving environment, building confidence environment, and, you know, learning from your mistakes and that kind of environment. And, you know, my dad was a postman, but always finished houses on the side or renovate, whatever. He grew up with that. And my mom was a factory worker. So my mom did a lot of the driving to practice and stuff because my dad had the two jobs. But my dad never missed a game. He'd always show up at the game. My mom would do the driving, but he would meet us at the game so he could work an extra hour. You know, there was never... there's never car rides of, you know, you should have done this, you know, X, Y, and Z. And my dad always said to me, it's a lot easier from my seat. I make no mistakes from my seat. he was pretty hand-off that way. And I think him, and my mom didn't know anything about hockey. So he was actually good, but she knew a lot about life. And, you know, she was a cheerleader and always pick me up when I was down, build my confidence for sure as a smaller player. And she'd always, she was always reassuring that everything's going to be okay. And I was hard on myself in general. So, you know, maybe my parents definitely were never hard on me, and that's not with sport. My mom and dad were demanding with school, and you know, they're respecting others and all that, you know, but with sport, they never were demanding.
Yeah, that's great. And one thing I wanted to ask you, kind of relating to that, is, you know, I was a smaller player as well. I was fortunate enough to play college hockey, and actually went on a recruiting visit to Vermont, and it didn't end up going there. But one of the things that my parents always instilled in me as a smaller player was, you know, there are going to be setbacks for sure, and you got to worry about the things that are in your control. But they always left a message with me that you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it and you work hard at it. And I'm always very grateful to the fact that they did that. And I was wondering, you know, as somebody that looked up to you as you were playing as a smaller player, is that something that your parents talked to you about a lot as well?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, there's, you know, if you want something bad enough, you'll do anything to get, you know, to get it. And that might these sacrifices and whatnot. And I feel like my parents made a lot of sacrifices so that me and my sister can have a wonderful life. Whether it's my dad working two jobs and my mom not having a social life, just to, you know, or social life with the times at the sporting events, you know, or to be, you know, so my parents, they got paid on Thursday and did grocery Thursday night, you know, and my lunches were awesome on Friday. And if we didn't go through the pantries, on the weekend, you know, Monday was decent. Tuesday was okay. Wednesday was terrible. And then on Thursday, my mom would usually give me her last $5 and she would have crackers and cheese for lunch. And that was the norm. So, you know, for them, you know, they gave us an environment that we can flourish and do anything we want. We touched so many sports, you know, but none of that was possible with the sacrifice that my parents made. And, you know, I don't know if they were sacrificed to them. I mean, I look back on it, I think I'd be doing the same thing. Like, you know, I mean, I think when you have kids, you realize you understand your parents a lot better because now you go through it yourself. Definitely was brought in an environment that, you know what, if you put your mind to something, you can accomplish everything you want. And you just got to, you know, be honest with yourself and how much you're putting in. There's a direct correlation, how much you're putting in and how much success you're going to have with that.
I absolutely love that, and we totally agree, and we talk a lot about that on our podcast. There's a lot of parents and a lot of youth coaches and kids that listen, so I think that's a message that's just unbelievable. And another thing that we talk about, because we've had other NHL guys on here before, specifically I remember a conversation we had with Danny Briere, and we talked a lot about it, but you know, your career, a lot of people just kind of see, you know, the highlights and the Stanley Cups and the Olympic gold medals and things like that, but your career, you know, it wasn't always a straight trajectory right to the top. There were a lot of ups and downs, and played in a couple different eras and really had to work your way through. So, you know, we wanted to ask you, and specifically talking to, you know, the kids that are out there that have hopes and dreams of playing at the highest levels, you know, what were some of the things that you did when maybe the times weren't so great? The times where the teams weren't calling and maybe were telling you were too small and things like that. How did you kind of navigate those waters, and what were some things that you did to prove them wrong?
I mean, it's confusing, you know. Sometimes it definitely gets confusing because, you know, you compare yourself to guys you played with, played against, you're at a college level, and now they're having success and you're not. Or you're playing in the American League and you're playing really well and other kids are getting called up, or some of the kids you're playing against in the American League, you feel like you're as good or better, and they're getting the looks and you're not. So sometimes it can be very confusing, especially as a, I mean, as a young adult, I guess, you know, I'm 22, 23. But I think the biggest thing is to, I think that helped me is I never, you know, through that confusing time, I made sure that I looked straight ahead and not worry so much about what's happening left and right in this confusing time. You know, what do I have to get better at? What do I need to do to get where I want to be? Not like, not waste time and saying, well, that's not fair. He's there and I'm not. Why? You know, it's just, you're wasting your time. I just feel if you, you know, if you put the blinders on through the confusing time and just go to work and be honest of what that work is, of what you have to improve on. Everybody's different. And I always say I was a good hockey player. I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't the best at one thing. I wasn't the fastest. Yeah, I had speed. I didn't have the best shot. Yeah, we got better, and, you know, I worked on it. I didn't have the best hand. No, but they were good enough. I thought the game pretty well. There was players around me that were better at some things, you know. But the one thing I felt that I really was elite is I felt I was elite at getting better. And that's just, you know, time and work and really being honest with yourself of what actually maybe is holding you back or could help you to advance more. And that's what's important. It's not what's happening left and right and wasting your time and feeling sorry for yourself.
That's great. So when you say one of your biggest strengths was you were good at getting better, would you say it was because you were good at self-reflection and looking in the mirror and saying, hey, like, I know I'm not doing this here, so I need to work on it? Or did you surround yourself with people who would help you and say, hey, you need to work on this? Like, how did you get better?
Yeah. Well, to me, I think, you know, in my era, we didn't have skills coach. We didn't have any of that. You know, you did everything on your own. You know, we didn't have the internet to learn something that some kid did in Germany or whatever, you know. Like, we didn't have that. Like, so I was really in touch with my environment. What was, whether kids I would play against, kids on my team, how would they do certain things? And sometimes I was better than some of them, than players, but they were better than me at certain things. Some kids had a better shot than me. Some kids had better hands than me. I was still maybe a better hockey player, but I'm like, I got to add that to my game. I got to add that to my game. I got, you know, and guys that I play against, same thing. They were better. There's a lot of players that are better than me and at a certain time. And all right, I got to pick something from their game and add it to my game. So just to be aware of, like, and not think that you, because you think you're a good player, that you know it all and you, there's no more room for growth. I always felt there was room for growth. And if you don't try to grow as a player, evolve as a player, I don't care how good you are and what level you're playing at, eventually it catches up to you. Could be 2 years, could be 3 years, could be 4 years. And that's why it's hard to have a long career in the NHL, because there's always people chasing you. So you have to keep evolving as well. And the game evolves too. The game changes a bit every 3-4 years, I feel, and you have to evolve. So for me, I always felt like I was good at that, and just noticing people around me or that I played with, play against. And as good as a player I became, I wasn't like so in love with my game. I was always trying to make it a bit better, you know, whatever that was.
That's awesome. And, you know, that self-determination is obviously so important if you want to play at the levels that you did. And you had it more than everybody else. But I bet you if I asked you, you know, if you did it on your own, you'd probably say no. So I wanted to ask you, you know, if there were a couple guys, maybe a couple teammates that you had or a coach, whether it was growing up or, you know, maybe in college or once you got to the pros, it really had an effect on you and really kind of showed you the way and was a mentor for you. You know, who would a couple of those guys be and what did they do to help you along the way?
Well, obviously growing up, I grew up in Laval, and my centerman for 13 years was Eric Perrin.
Yeah.
We ended up going to the to college together, but Eric was in, and he just retired. He just played his last year. Actually, just got off the phone with him about an hour ago. and he was a terrific hockey player. We really learned to play together. You know, like, we were all about giving goals and I think I became I became kind of a pretty good IQ. I think because of that environment I had for so long playing with a player like Eric, where at a young age, you know, he was a big part of how I kept progressing as a player through my youth and college. And obviously, we were fortunate enough to win the cup together in Tampa 2004. You know, and I got to college, and you know, a guy. Roger Grillo was there, and Roger and I are really good friends, and he was assistant coach there, but he, you know, I stayed in touch with him after college, and he was a sounding board for me, and like, I knew he'd watch every game, and I would get a second opinion, and he wasn't critiquing my game, and more like listening, and try to, you know, help me advance, and solve my problems a little bit, and so to this day, you know, Roger, I think, played a big part in that in helping me get to where I got, not just the on-ice piece, but the mental part. So, obviously, in the NHL, play with some terrific players and probably better people. You know, if you look at the centerman that I got a chance to play with in Tampa Bay, I kind of went there took me about a year to get situated and get my game going, but my original sentiment was Brad Richards, you know, and then I went from Richie to Vinny LeCavalier, and I went from Vinny to Steven Stamkos. So that's three.
<bad.
laughs> That's three pretty good sentiment that, you know, I, you know, they were a big part of my success. You know, and Coach Tortorella, who gave me that platform, like, hey, I'm first coach, I fell at that level since I played college, actually, that, you know what, I think you're pretty good, and I'm going to give you a chance, you know, so I owe a lot to, you know, him giving me that platform, and I just kind of ran with it.
That's great. Well, Marty, you talked about kind of learning the mental piece and the on-ice piece. I run a training company for hockey players here in St. Louis, and they would all be really upset with me if I didn't ask you about your legendary legs. Did you always have those tree trunks you got going on in your pants?
Yeah,
or was that something you developed in college or what?
No, I mean, I think I have some good genes. My dad has pretty big legs. And I mean, obviously I've always worked out really hard and really focused on the leg part. And, I think I have a pretty good, ability to develop muscle.
Is it hard for you to buy pants?
Yes.
Like it honestly must be hard to buy pants with those things.
Terrible. Like, lengthwise they gotta be medium, but you know, they don't fit very well.
Oh, it's the worst. Small guy problems. Like, I'm the same way. Like, I have to buy, like, you know, like 30 whatever waist pants, and then I have to hem them like 7 inches just to so yeah, it's not good. But wanted to get back to hockey a little bit, because we talk a lot about team building stuff, and we talk a lot about what it takes to kind of win a championship. And you obviously won the Stanley Cup there with Tampa Bay, and one of the staples of that team, as you mentioned, with some of those guys you played with, is obviously talent. But, you know, what was it about the camaraderie of that that group that that allowed you, because we're big believers that without that camaraderie, without that buy-in, you can't go to special places. So, you know, if there's something or a couple things that you can point to about that team and about that group of guys and culture, you know, what would it be?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think leadership was everything, you know, right from, you know, Tortorella down. You know, we had Dave Enerchuk who came in, was our captain. You know, and they brought in Tim Taylor, Freddie Modine was there. Like, we had some really good leaders, and we were a close group. And I think it started with, you know, Dave, who had been in the league for a long time and understood, you know, what kind of group usually have success. What they, you know, they spend a lot of time together, whether it's dinners and after games, or it could be go grabbing a couple beers after a bad loss, whatever it is, you know, like, it's just, there was a lot of camaraderie, and we were close. We played, we really cared about one another. So it's, no, I wasn't shocked that we had the success that we did. I think we caught people by surprise a little bit, because I think we, all of us were like, weren't really established yet. You know, we were on our way as players, and it just kind of like went really quick. It just happened really fast. But once it did, it just kind of like, you know, it made us into a Stanley Cup champion, you know? So, it wasn't overnight. It was like 2-3 years in the making. And once we went over the hill a little bit, like, we just really took off.
That's awesome.
Individually, and a lot of guys individually, but as a team as well.
That's awesome. And I wanted to ask you about that, because you talked about, you know, how close you were as a group, and you talked about going to get beers after a tough loss and hanging out and having dinners together and stuff like that. You know, in today's game, it's very individualized. A lot of the guys are really focused on their careers. A lot of guys have, you know, their own strength coaches that they go back and work with in the summer, and skill coaches. And I think players today, that, you know, they work very hard, but sometimes I feel like that camaraderie and you know, hanging out with the team and just forming those bonds gets a little bit lost because they are so focused on their own careers. Is that something that you've seen in the evolution of the game, being in it for so long? And if so, do you feel like it's almost like a lost art that needs to get back if you want to win a truly Stanley Cup?
Yeah. Well, until you get rid of all the cell phones, it's going to be pretty hard to do, you know? I mean, for us, when I came to the league, I didn't have a cell phone. And it sure took me a while to, you know, even like, I mean, I guess I had the iPhone and the texting and the emails towards, you know, in my 30s, but, you know, the first 7-8 years, I didn't have that. So guys, when you got on the bus, you weren't checking your phone. You were talking to one another. So you weren't going to your room, you know, and getting on your phone. So none of that happened. So you were like hanging out together more. So, but so I definitely saw a switch. You know, I live both. I think it's great that you can be connected, and, you know, your outside friends or whatever, and coaches and stuff. But like, I think it's important that, you know, that you do get to know your teammate and spend time with them, and actually like know that, you know, he's a guy you go in the trenches with, and not just, you know, be all about yourself. Most teams, I mean, if the best players on your team are all about themselves, it's going to be tough.
So Marty, I just stopped playing. I played for 10 years, and last year was my first year coaching a U18 team. And some nights on the trips, our head coach would collect the guys' cell phones to make them talk to each other, to make them sleep. And like, I don't know how I feel about it, if I like it or I don't. Like, I think it's necessary, because sometimes, you know, the team's not getting that bonding. And do you think that that's something that needs to be done for these kids and for, you know, young pros, college guys, or do they need to learn how to be able to put the phone down and socialize with their team? Or is it something where coaches, you think, need to step in and be like, I'm taking the phones, I'm going to force you to talk to each other?
I mean, I think at a certain age, you know, I think you're going to have a tough time doing that. And I think at the youth level, you can probably police it a little bit more. But I think, kids are adults, and at the end of the day, like, you know, they should recognize that, and maybe it's got to come from a position of leadership with the team. Hey, boys, you know, why don't we do this? And, you know, but at the point of a coach is collecting phones, I don't think that's going to happen at the pro level. I mean, the junior level, you might be able to, but, you know, I don't know. To me, like, if their most important thing in their life is their phone, you know, that's going to be it's going to be tough to find success as an individual and as a team.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's a good segue into, you know, a lot of what we talk about on this podcast, and that's youth hockey. And you have three boys that play, and your oldest is going to play with the National Team Development Program next year. And you're very involved in coaching in youth hockey right now. And as I said before we got on here, ran into Jeff Halpern in the bagel shop earlier today, and he was telling me how, you know, for you, one of the biggest things that you impart on the kids, and I'm assuming it was something that was huge for you, is the importance of the players coaching themselves and the importance of the players of, you know, reflecting and being self-aware. Is that something that you impart on the kids that you coach? And if so, what are some things that you do with them to make sure that they are coaching themselves and it always, doesn't always have to come from you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely when they, especially at the Bantam level now, you know, I think the youth hockey is all great fun and games until you get to Bantam, and now with the hitting, it becomes real. Okay. And now you have kids that are developing and, you know, going through puberty at different time. And I think as a coach, you have to manage that reality of some kids are just bigger, stronger than everybody else. And, you know, you have to make sure you're doing the right coaching at that time. And some, it's got to come from them as well. But, you know, through video, you know, we try to help a little bit. Sometimes I'll have them watch video and themselves and, you know, and whether it's homework or, you know, I don't even call it homework, but, you know, I'm telling them to find me three clips where you could have, you know, done something better and with and without the puck, you know, because to me, it's really important that they learn to play with and without it, you know, especially in the youth level. They don't understand that the game is played without it. Some kids just start playing when they have the puck on their stick, and it's like, it's too late. So, you know, but yeah, they got to take some ownership, you know, about, you know, and if it's not watching a couple, you know, a couple games a month and just don't see yourself and, you know, but the problem with the bigger, stronger kid is, you know, their strength and their size eventually narrows. So now can they rely on everything else to get them, you know, out of trouble or making the right play? And sometimes the smaller kid who develops later almost has an advantage a little bit because he had to use his brain so much to survive. And now he's developing physically, late bloomer, so to call. Now it all comes together. And because now he finally has strength and maybe more speed. But, you know, so I like the kids that, you know, are honest with themselves. And we stress on that, you know. I always tell them, you don't need your parents to, you know, to tell you if you played well or good. Because honestly, like 90% of them, 95% of them, they probably, the kids know more about hockey than their parents at that point. So they should be able to self-evaluate themselves and, like, you know what, and not a good game is always because you scored two goals. and not a bad game. It's not because you didn't score any goals either. You should have a good understanding of, did you have an impact on the game, whether you scored or not scored. You know, and that's what's important. But once the kids have that, I think their game just starts growing and growing and growing and growing, because they self-evaluate really well. So I try to talk about that with my players. I do video collectively, individual as well. You know, but not at the point where we're in the video room every day, all day. You know, it's here and there. And you don't want to take the feel out of the game. You don't want them to think so much. But you want them to see what it looks like too, good or bad.
Yeah.
I might have got away from your question. What was the question?
No, it was good. It was perfect. But I actually want to ask you about something that you talked about, because this is something that we talk about all the time on the podcast, and that's playing away from the puck and how important it is, because you only have the puck on your stick for so often during a game, and what you do away from it is so important. And you know, in talking with Jeff earlier today as well, he said that, you know, when you're coaching your kids and the teams that you've coached, you know, teaching the hockey concepts and the hockey IQ and how to play away from the puck is something of paramount importance to you. And I completely agree. So I wanted to ask you, what are some things that you do, or what are some maybe concepts that you stress with the kids that you coach, things that you might have learned when you were playing, that you think it really teaches that hockey sense, hockey IQ, that helps the kids go throughout their hockey careers?
Well, for me, the biggest thing in hockey, with, you know, obviously you're five skater on the ice. And, you know, I always use the term of not duplicating jobs. You know, so we're more spread. You can support better when you can hold, when you're holding hands with your teammate. You're probably if you can hold hands with your teammate, you're probably duplicating jobs. You know. And I don't know who is. It's one. I mean, I could look at video and tell you who's duplicating job. But just in general, just in the read and react, okay, in the read and react to make sure that you don't go duplicate job.
I like that.
You know, where you if somebody's already supporting there, then go support somewhere else. But some kids want the puck so much, they only want to play when they have the puck. Then they'll go duplicate job. And now, we can make one play that we cannot make the next play because we have two guys holding hands. And, you know, so if you look at the NHL level, you know, the puck support is unbelievable. And a lot of it is just, you know, guys don't duplicate job. And when the teams get in trouble, usually it's because they duplicate job on both sides of the puck. You know, if I'm attacking and I'm able to suck two guys in, then I got you.
Love
you
that.
Know what I mean? Whether there's miscommunication or misassignment or whatever it is, if I have two on me, that means I sucked you guys in, and I will probably turn this into a scoring chance. Because on the offensive side of thing, if you can learn the offensive side of thing, especially entering the zone, if you can learn to play between two opponents, you're deadly. Like Kucherov is one of the best at it.
Yeah.
If you can learn to play in between two people, you know, not two linemates. If you can learn to play in between two opponents, who's got you? So that's a lot of speed control. That's a lot of being eyes up and understanding where everybody is. If controlling your speed, you know, why skate hard into crap? Why not skate hard and then make him think, okay, who's got me? If they don't know who's got you, then you're usually creating time and space. And if you don't have time and space, you have two guys on you. Now you make a skill play, and that's probably a scoring chance. So, you know. Those are the things about, you know, offensively and defensively, do not duplicate job.
Love that.
Yeah, and that's something that Toph and I have talked about regarding amateurs and the kids, like, it's not just the guy with the puck too. It's the guys without the puck reading what the guy with the puck is doing. Like you said, like, don't just go towards him because he has the puck. Like, maybe look for that open ice. Or if you see he's trying to draw two guys in, you need to get the guy without the puck. You need to get somewhere where the passer can then distribute it through those two guys he's drawing in. So you're not just going around the ice not thinking. Like, you have to go around the ice and read and react off your teammates, and you need to be in a position to catch that puck from the guy who's drawing two guys to him.
Yeah, and sometimes also it's just letting the play evolve a hair, because sometimes it gets confusing. Who's supporting? Okay, well, sometimes both guys end up kind of like starting, like, look, they're going to the same spot. Maybe you take a little break and maybe there's communication, and now you reroute yourself because there was some kind of, whether it's eye contact or communication, and you reroute yourself. And now you let the play evolve, and now you're more in a support position. And usually you have more options. You give the puck carrier more options, and that's what you want. You don't want the puck carrier to end up having to die with the puck because he has no option. A lot of time, like, turnovers are created not just because of the guy with the puck, but the guys without the puck didn't do their job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me ask you this, because the game has changed, so much over the past, 5-10 years. And, one of the things that you're hearing, especially at the youth hockey, but also at the highest levels in pro hockey too, is playing fast. And playing fast and playing fast. It's something we talk about on the podcast, and which is important. You have to think fast the higher the levels that you go, because guys are bigger, stronger, faster, smarter. But I feel like the term poise is kind of getting lost a little bit today with all this determination on playing fast. Is that something that you see as well, as, one of the most poised players to play the game? What would you say to that?
Well, I mean, poise is a big thing, but there's a big difference between playing fast and rushing it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of kids get confused between playing fast and rushing it. Like, because why play fast when you have zero options? So you're going to skate hard into crap. Why skate hard into crap? Why not, like, have some deception in your game where you'll take two hard strides and then you'll slow down and back people up because you're by yourself. You're on a one-on-two. How many guys can go on a one-on-two and have a success rate, generate a scoring chance? It doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah.
Every now and then, and it's on ESPN or whatever, NHL Network, But now the kids see that and they think, oh, I got to do that. Now this happens like 3% of the time. So you're going to put all your basket and 3% of the time, So that, to me, that's not playing the game. That's playing fast, but it's playing stupid. So
thank you.
So the big difference into playing fast and rushing it. You don't want to rush it. Like rushing, not speeding the puck up, rushing it as in playing almost too fast. Like there's space behind the opponents and you have good speed. Yes. But to me, it's more like, think quick, not play fast. If you think quick, you'll play fast. You'll play at the speed that it needs to be played at. But if you think you're playing fast because they're going 100 miles an hour all the time, how can you think the game going 100 miles an hour all the time? There's no way. At some point in time, to me, on every shift, you should probably hit top speed. I don't know when that is. Could be on the back check, could be on driving the net. At some point, you're going to have to hit top speed, but you're not going to be top speed your whole shift. It's impossible. If you are, you're not thinking the game. So there's a big misconception of playing fast and playing at the pace that probably needs to be played at, and that varies all the time. That's part of the IQ. Managing your speed. It's part of the thinking the game. But speed is important, but at the right time.
I, lo-
know where the puck is going to be, not where it is. So you have to think in the future. Know if you're gonna if you're now, know where it's gonna go, not where the puck is now. Where do you need to put the puck? You know, so know your options before you get it. Because if you get the puck and now look for your options, it's too late.
Yeah, I tell the kids that I coach, like, I want you guys playing chess, not checkers. As you're playing, I want you thinking that move ahead, as opposed to checkers where you just throw the pieces around the board. Like, chess is more methodical, you know. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's time. Yeah. There's time for both.
Right.
And you got to figure out when that is.
That's the hard part. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Oh, that's unreal. Well, the one other thing that, you know, just in hearing you talk and as a smaller player, it's something that I tried to you know, really emulate in my game was the speed change. And you talked about that a little bit and how important that speed change is and knowing when to change speeds. Is that something that you talk about with your players a lot? And do you feel like that was a thing that you implemented in your game when you were playing as well?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was important, you know, like as a player, that if you're playing against, like, and in today's game, there's so much back pressure.
Yeah.
Okay, when I played, there wasn't as much back pressure. There was at some point towards the end of my career. But, you know, so there was, you could create a lot of room behind you by going fast north. You could push these back and then, like, kind of slow it down, you know, and cut across. Well, yeah. Now it's really hard to do that. You really have to pick your spots. And that's why you need, yeah, and you need, you know, you need your, the puck support is so important to create space. You know, the changing speed is so important to create space. So it's not like one thing. There's so many things, but they're both with or without the puck that you're able to create space.
And, Artie,
it's very gray. It's not black and white. Hockey's not football. You're not running around. You're not, like, you know, it's yep. very gray. And you have to make quick decisions. But, you know, if you can think in the future all the time, not think in the present, you're always going to try to be a move ahead. And that's with and without the puck. I'm just the puck carrier.
To get good at that, Marty, did you ever get into, like, visualization before games or anything? Because we've had on mental coaches and, you know, people who are focusing on different ways to visualize things before the game and seeing yourself in situations before you even play the game and working on the mental side. Did you ever do any of that stuff in your career?
Yeah, I mean, getting dressed before the game, you know, I visualize myself coming across the middle or be on the breakaway or a 2-on-1, stuff like that. You know, but I always tried in practices to not just go through the drill and get my reps in. I really try to, every drill, every reps I got, I always put myself in the game in my mind, you know. So just for instance, going to 2-on-1, well, unless the drill is designed with tons of back pressure, your 2-on-1 means nothing in today's game. How many times are you going to get a 2-on-1 with no back pressure where you can go as slow as you want?
That'd be nice, huh?
It's not going to happen. Yes. So I always felt, whether there was back pressure or no back pressure, I always tried to play it in my mind and in my reps, do it at game speed. You know, so that I felt like it prepared me better for the game. And some drills sometimes they don't look like anything, but they're actually like, oh, this could happen in the game. And, like, so I try to put myself in the game mode. And I think I definitely benefit from that.
Absolutely. I think that's awesome. As coaches, trying to put your players in situations that are game-like too, I think is really important. Yeah, gone are the days of slow two-on-one drills and stuff like that. So I think that's incredible. Well, Marty, we've had you on here for quite some time, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about what things were like right now with you in life after hockey. And you're a co-founder of a company called Seven. So if you can, just kind of tell our listeners and just what you kind of have going on. I know you're a hockey dad and a hockey coach as well, but how's that transition to life after hockey been, and how are you enjoying being almost like dad as a full-time job as well?
Yeah, no, it's been busy. I mean, I went from, you know, being a player and being in the rink every day as a player, and I switched to, you know, being in the rink a lot just as a coach. I still get to, you know, travel a little bit with my kids and go compete with them, and I just don't have to play, which is kind of nice. So it's fun. You know, I was able to coach them all, and still now I'm going to coach the younger two. My oldest is moving to Michigan. So I'm focused on the younger two now, but, you know, we just came, we're driving back from the lake house in Quebec, and we skate up there, and I enjoy that. Just the three of us, the four of us on the ice. It's a lot of fun. And, I like to see them grow as players and as human. You know, I think our biggest job as coaches, parents is, you know, to make good human. And if they become great at something along the way, that's a bonus. And that's going to be because they have the passion for it. So obviously my boys have a pretty good passion for hockey. So, you know, I'm trying to, you know, put some gas on their fire with some of my knowledge and trying to help them out. But, you know, not at the price of not making good human. And that goes for all the players that I coach, not just my kids. So, you know, being a good teammate is probably the number one thing you can be as an athlete. There's not many teams that you won't make if you're a good teammate. If you're a bad teammate, you know, I don't care how good you are, you're going to have a tough time to keep moving forward. In terms of Seven, the company is called 7-7. It's kind of a mini version of Shark Tank.
Nice. Oh, it's my favorite show.
Yeah. So we just talk, you know, companies come and pitch, and we try to, you know, we're mostly in the sports innovation kind of stuff, but it's fun. It's about 9 to 5, and we have a good group involved, and that we can really, you know, go through the process and do our due diligence with the companies and whether we invest in them or not, and you know. If we see fit, we will invest. If we don't, we won't. And it's been fun.
Which guy are you? Are you like Mark Cuban, or are you like Mr. Wonderful, where you're kind of a dick to him, or are you the nicer guy? Or which Shark Tank guy are you most like?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm learning. I'm surrounding myself with pretty good guys that I've been doing it and know what they're doing. So I'm still learning, but I enjoy it.
Gotcha.
Surround yourself with the best people. That's the big thing in life, right? Well,
yeah. If you surround yourself with people smarter than you, that's good.
Yeah. I always try to be the dumbest guy in the room. That's for sure. And I do a pretty good job of that a lot of the time. So, well, Marty, thank you so much for doing this. This has been amazing. And, I have to tell you, I didn't want to tell you at the beginning of this interview, but, you know, you were a huge inspiration for me. I was a younger, smaller kid growing up, and, you know, wore 26 in college, wore 26 in pro hockey, and, you know, your success and how you did it was a huge inspiration for me. So this has been a thrill for me to do this with you, and congrats on all of your successes, and obviously best of luck with your new ventures and with being a great hockey dad there out in Connecticut as well.
Well, thanks a lot, and have fun with the podcast and good luck with that, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much, Marty. Safe travels.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
You got it. Okay. All right.